Chapter 7. At one time, Kate spent as many hours at Elk Run, the Franklin stud farm, as she did at the Circle L. But when she arrived Tuesday night for dinner, Elk Run no longer felt familiar. It seemed like years instead of weeks since her last visit. Kate's enthusiasm for this dinner with Clay and Rory had never been high, but now she felt decidedly uncomfortable. "Kate, welcome." Rory flew out the door the minute Kate pulled into the driveway. She stepped from the car into Rory's hug. Clay Franklin followed his wife and briefly held Kate close, smiling down on her the same way he always had from the time she was 13. Back then, she'd worshipped him from afar, and she'd worshipped him more with each passing year. Kate paused, waiting for the surge of regret and pain she'd been expecting. To her astonishment, it didn't come. "We're so glad you could make it," Rory said as she opened the door. Recognizing Kate, Clay's old dog Blue ambled over for his usual pat. Kate was more than happy to comply and bent down to scratch his ears. Mary, the Franklin's housekeeper, bustled about the kitchen, dressed in her bib apron, hair twisted into thick braids and piled on top of her head. Kate could scarcely remember a time she hadn't seen Mary in an apron. The scent of freshly baked pie permeated the room, mingling with a hearty aroma of roast beef and simmering vegetables. "I hope that's one of your award-winning pies I'm smelling, Mary," Kate said. "I've had my heart set on a piece all day." "Oh, get away with you," Mary returned gruffly. But the happy light that sparked from her eyes told Kate how gratified the housekeeper was by her request. "When are you going to give me a recipe?" Kate asked, although she didn't know whom she'd be baking pies for now that her father had remarried. "No one can bake an apple pie like yours." "Mary won't share her secret with me either," Rory said, giving a soft laugh. "I don't think she's willing to trust a city slicker yet."
"I never wrote down any recipe," Mary grumbled, casting Rory a stern look. "I just make my pies the same way my mother did."
"I wish I could bake like Mary does," Rory said, slipping her arm around her husband's waist. They exchanged a meaningful glance. Clay's smile showed he couldn't care less whether or not she could bake a pie. Once more, Kate braced herself for the pain of seeing them together, gentle and loving. But to her surprise, she didn't feel so much as a pinprick of distress. She relaxed, wondering at what was happening. Or rather, wasn't, and why. "Where's Skip?" she asked suddenly. She missed Clay's younger brother almost as much as she did Clay. They'd been friends for years.
"Football practice," Clay explained.
"He's quarterback this year and proud as a peacock. He'll be home later."
"About the time Mary serves her pie," Rory whispered to Kate. Skip's appetite for sweets was legendary. The small party headed into the homey living room. The piano stood against one wall, and Kate noted the music on the stand. She'd always been the one who'd played that piano, but it was Rory who played for Clay now. There had been a time when Kate and Clay had sung together, their voices blending in a melodious harmony. But Clay sang with Rory now. Kate expected the knowledge to claw at her insides, and she did feel a small twinge of regret, but that was all.
"Skip's hoping to catch you later," Rory said.
"As I recall, you played quarterback your senior year of high school,"
Kate reminded Clay as she claimed the overstuffed chair. "That was the first year the Nightingale team made it to the state finals." Rory smiled delightedly at her husband.
"You never told me that."
"There wasn't much to tell," Clay said with a short laugh.
"We were eliminated in the first round."
He sat beside Rory and draped his arm around her shoulders, as if he had to keep touching her to believe she was here at his side. Mary carried in a tray of wine glasses and an unopened bottle of a locally produced sparkling white.
"I take it Devin and Dorothea arrived safely in California?"
she asked as she uncorked the wine. "Yes, Dad phoned when they arrived at Dorothea's daughter's house."
"We didn't get a chance to say more than a few words to you at the reception,"
Rory apologized.
You were so busy pouring coffee, there wasn't much opportunity to chat.
I know. It was good of you and Clay to come. We wouldn't have missed it for the world, Clay said.
I wanted to tell you how nice your father and Dorothea look together. And for that matter, you and Luke, too,
Rory added. Thank you, Kate said simply, wondering if her friends had heard about the incident on the Wilkins' front porch. It still embarrassed Kate to think of all her father's friends seeing her and Luke together, like that. So much has happened in the last month, she said, trying to change the subject before either of them mentioned her father's wedding again. Who'd ever have believed Luke would end up buying the ranch?
It must have come as a shock to you, Clay said evenly. But I've been after him for years to get his own spread.
What are your plans now that the Circle L's been sold? Rory asked.
I'm looking for a place in town, she said, and sipped her wine.
From what Luke told me, he'd rather you continued living on the ranch,
Clay said, studying her as though he knew something she didn't.
I know, Kate admitted. It's very generous of him, but I'd prefer to get an apartment of my own.
Good luck finding one, Clay murmured.
They were both aware that a decent apartment might be difficult to locate. Nightingale was a place of family dwellings, not singles apartments. They chatted easily as they waited for Mary to announce dinner. Every now and then, Kate saw Clay glance over at Rory. His look was tender and warm, and filled with the deep joy that came from loving completely, and knowing that love was returned. When Rory Campbell had arrived in their midst, Kate had seen almost immediately that Clay was attracted to her. That was understandable, after all, since Rory was a beautiful woman. In the beginning, Kate had done everything she could to combat her jealousy. Rory had been due to leave Elk Run in a few days, and once she was gone, Kate had told herself, their lives and feelings would return to normal. Eventually, Rory did go back to San Francisco, but Clay couldn't forget her. Kate had done her best to pretend. She'd even talked Clay into setting a wedding date, pressuring him in a not-so-subtle way to marry her quickly. They'd been talking about it for years, and Kate wanted the deed done before Rory realized what she'd given up. Their getting married seemed the perfect solution. Then, if Rory did come to Nightingale again, it would be too late. Kate's strategy had been a desperate one, planned by a desperate woman. And as often happened in such cases, her scheme backfired. Kate didn't think she'd ever forget the day Clay told her he wanted to break their engagement. The words had scarred her soul like lye on tender skin. He'd come to the ranch, and from the minute he'd asked to talk to her, Kate had known something was terribly wrong. She'd tried to ease the tension with talk of bridesmaids' dresses and floral arrangements, but Clay had stopped her. He'd sat with his hands folded, his eyes regarding her sadly.
I wouldn't hurt you for anything, he'd said, and his words rang with truth and regret. Clay, you could never hurt me.
Which was a lie because he was already inflicting pain. He'd told her then, simply and directly, that it would be wrong for them to marry. Not once did he mention Rory's name. He didn't need to. Kate had known for weeks that Clay was in love with the other woman, but she'd chosen instead to involve her heart in a painful game of pretend. Instead of accepting the truth when Clay had come to her with his decision, she'd insisted he was mistaken, that they were right for each other and had been all their lives. The memory humbled her now. She'd tried to convince him that all they needed was a little more time. By the next week, or maybe the next month, Clay would understand that he'd made a mistake and he'd want to go through with a wedding. She could afford to be patient because she loved him so much. Kindly and as gently as possible, Clay had told her time wouldn't alter the way he felt. Then he'd left, although she'd pleaded with him to stay. In the week that followed, Kate had felt as though she was walking around in a fog. She laughed, she smiled, she slept, she ate. The school year hadn't started yet, so there was little else to occupy her mind. The days bled into each other, one indistinguishable from the next. Soon after he'd broken their engagement, Clay headed for San Francisco, purportedly to attend a horse show.
In her heart, she'd expected Clay to return with Rory at his side. As hard as it had been, she'd tried to accept the fact Clay loved Rory, and nothing was ever going to change that. To everyone's surprise, Clay came home alone, and there was no mention of Rory. Kate didn't know what had happened between them. Hope stirred in her heart, and she'd briefly entertained thoughts of Clay resuming their engagement, the two of them marrying and settling down together the way she'd always dreamed. Instead, she stood helplessly by as Clay threw himself into his work, making unreasonable demands on himself and his men. At first, she believed the situation would change. She began stopping off at Elk Run, trying to be the friend she knew Clay needed. But Clay didn't want her. He didn't want anyone. Except Rory. Only then did Kate recognize that it was in her power to help this man she loved. She talked over her idea with Luke, even before she approached her father. Luke, and Luke alone, had seemed to understand and appreciate her sacrifice. When she couldn't hold back the tears any longer, it had been Luke who'd held her in his arms, and who'd beamed with pride over the unselfishness of what she'd done. As she sat listening to the pre-dinner conversation, even contributing now and then, she reminded herself that Luke had been the one who'd made it possible to survive that difficult time. Luke. Losing Clay had threatened to destroy her, mentally and physically, but Luke hadn't allowed that to happen. It was then he'd started bullying her, she realized. She'd thought of him as a tyrant with his unreasonable demands and his gentle harassments. Kate had been so furious with him for assuming command of her life that she'd overlooked the obvious. Only now could she understand and appreciate his strategy. Gradually, the fire had returned to her eyes and her life, although it had been fueled by indignation. Nevertheless, it was there, and Luke had been the person responsible. She'd been furious with him when she should have been grateful. Luke had never stopped being her friend, the best friend she'd ever had. She'd leaned heavily on him in the days and weeks before Clay married Rory, though she'd never understood how much he'd done for her, how much he cared. The wine glasses were replenished, and Kate proposed a toast. "To your happiness," she said sincerely. It pained her to remember that Clay and Rory had nearly lost each other. Because of her. Nightingale had needed a librarian, and with her father's help, Kate had convinced the town council to offer the job to Rory Campbell. When she'd turned them down, Kate herself had called Rory, and together they'd wept over the phone and later in each other's arms. So Rory had returned to Nightingale, and she and Clay had been married, in October, the same month Kate had planned for her own wedding to Clay. Kate's thoughts were pulled back to the present when Clay said, "Rory is a piece of good news." He cast a proud look at his wife. "What's that?" Kate asked. Rory blushed becomingly. "Clay shouldn't have said anything. It's not certain yet." "Rory?" Kate said, studying her carefully. "Are you pregnant?"
"Congratulations."
"No, no." Rory rushed to correct that impression. "Good grief, we'd been married less than a month."
"It's about Rory's book," Clay explained.
Vaguely, Kate recalled that Rory wrote children's books. In fact, she'd been on her way to a writer's conference when the car she was driving broke down on the road not far from Elk Run. "Has one of your stories been accepted for publication?" Kate asked eagerly.
"Not exactly," Rory said.
"An editor from New York phoned and asked for a few revisions, but she sounded enthusiastic about the book and there was talk of a contract once the revisions are done," Clay said.
His fingers were twined with his wife's, and he looked as excited as if he'd created the story himself.
"Oh, Rory, that's wonderful."
Kate felt pleased and proud for her friend.
"What's the book about?"
"Well, the story involves Starbright and the night we delivered Night Song. And it's told from the foal's point of view," Rory said.
"I know I'm her husband," Clay broke in. "But I read it, and I don't mind telling you the book's gripping. Any editor worth her salt would snap it up in a minute."
"Oh, Clay, honestly."
"When will you know if it's sold?" Kate asked. "I don't think Nightingale's ever had an author living here before. Dad could convince the town council to commission a sign. You might even become a tourist attraction. Who knows where this could go?
They all laughed, but Rory cautioned. It could be months before I hear, so don't go having your father commission any signs.
You should have seen her after she got the call, Clay said, his eyes twinkling with merriment.
I didn't know what to think. Rory came running out of the house and started shrieking and jumping up and down.
So I was a little excited.
Playfully, Clay rolled his eyes.
A little, that's got to be the understatement of the year.
I'd behave the same way, Kate said. And you seem pretty thrilled about all this yourself, Clay Franklin.
Clay admitted it, and then the discussion turned to the awards Clay had accumulated in several national horse shows in the past year.
A few minutes later, Mary announced that dinner was ready, and they moved into the dining room. The meal was lively, and conversation flowed easily around the table. Kate had been dreading this dinner from the moment Rory had issued the invitation. Now she was pleasantly surprised by how enjoyable the evening had become. She'd been convinced that seeing Clay and Rory's happiness would deepen her own pain. It hadn't happened. She'd expected to spend this evening nursing her wounds behind a brave front. Instead, she felt giddy with a sense of release. She had loved Clay, loved him with a youthful innocence, but she didn't feel the same way toward him now. Clay belonged to Rory, and Rory to him. The tender relationship Kate had once shared with him was part of the past. He would always be a special person in her life, but those old feelings, that adulation she'd felt for him, were relegated to her adolescent fantasies. Kate Logan was a woman now. She wasn't sure exactly when the transformation had taken place, but it had. She'd struggled with it, fought the metamorphosis, because change, as always, was both painful and difficult. Kate realized for the first time that all the pain, all the uncertainty, had not been for nothing.
Kate?
Luke called as he let himself into the kitchen.
You around?
Here.
She was at the back of the house packing away the library of books her father kept in his den. Every night she did a little more to get the main house ready for Luke to move in and her to move out. She straightened and tucked in a few wisps of hair that had escaped the red bandana. She wore blue jeans and an old gray sweatshirt, and no doubt looked terrible. Despite that, she was pleased to see Luke, eager to talk to him. She was wiping her dusty palms on her jeans when he walked in.
What are you doing?
He stood just inside the door, a frown creasing his forehead.
What does it look like? She said. I'm packing.
He hesitated, then said,
I told you. I want you to live here. At least to the end of the school year. I thought you understood that.
I do, Luke. It's just that this place is yours now, or will be soon, and there's no reason for me to stay on.
For one despairing moment, she was swept away on a crashing wave of disbelief and misery at everything she'd lost in so short a time. She could barely walk through her home and not feel an aching throb at the prospect of leaving it behind. But the sale of the ranch was part of the new reality she was learning to face.
Of course there's a reason for you to stay here,
Luke insisted, his voice sharp with impatience.
It's where you belong, where I want you. Isn't that reason enough?
Kate forced a laugh. Come on, Luke, there's no excuse for me to continue living here. You don't need a housekeeper or a cook or anything else. You're completely self-sufficient. And I could do without all the gossip my living here would start in town. She paused a moment, then added gently,
I really can manage on my own, you know. I'm a big girl, Luke, and I don't need anyone to take care of me.
He wanted to argue with her. Kate could sense it with every breath he drew. But when he spoke next, his remarks had nothing to do with her moving.
I suppose I should tell you about the feed store, he said.
His voice was controlled, though Kate heard a hint of anger in his words. He'd been just as incensed as she was over the incident. Once she'd come to grips with her own outrage, she'd seen how furious Luke was.
No. Well, yes, I guess I am curious to hear how you handled that. Would you like some coffee?
Please.
Kate led the way into the kitchen and filled two ceramic mugs. After giving Luke his, she walked into the living room and sat on the sofa. Relaxing, she slipped off her shoes and tucked her feet underneath her. It felt good to sit here with Luke, almost like old times. So often over the years, they'd sat and talked like this. Friends, confidants, companions. She cradled the mug in both hands, letting the warmth seep up her arms. "I had dinner with Clay and Rory last night," she said, wanting to share with Luke what she'd discovered.
"Yes, I heard." "Listen, you can close the door on the situation with Fred Garner. You don't need to worry about it anymore."
Kate lowered her eyes. "Thanks," she murmured. There was so much she wanted to tell Luke. "I had a great time at Elk Run last night, although I honestly didn't expect to."
"I can personally guarantee the matter with Garner is over. If it isn't a dead issue, it soon will be."
Kate would rather not talk about the wedding lottery. The subject had become an embarrassing memory, a very embarrassing one. But as Luke said, it was finished. There were other, more important issues to discuss. "All day I'd worried about that dinner," she said, starting over. "I wondered how I'd ever be able to sit at a table with Clay, knowing he was married to Rory. But I did. Oh, Luke, I can't tell you how happy they are. Deep down, I knew they would be, and I had to brace myself for that, expecting to find it unbearably painful. But something incredible happened. During the evening, I learned a valuable lesson about..."
"Good."
Luke's response was clipped, detached. Kate hesitated. From the moment he'd walked into her father's office, she'd felt something was wrong, but she hadn't been able to put her finger on it. "Luke, what is it?"
"Nothing. I'd prefer not talking about Clay and Rory, all right?"
"I suppose so," she said, feeling hurt. After an awkward moment, she attempted conversation once more. "You'll never guess who I got a letter from today." If Luke didn't want to talk about Clay and Rory, then she'd try another topic that was sure to pique his interest. "Eric Wilson, remember him?" A slight smile touched Luke's mouth.
"I'm not likely to forget him. What'd he have to say?"
"He's moved back to Portland and is talking to his ex-wife. Apparently, she's been just as miserable as he has since their divorce. It looks as if they might get back together."
"That's good news."
"He asked me to give you his regards and sends his thanks." Kate paused. "But he didn't say what I was supposed to thank you for?" She made the statement a question, hoping Luke would supply an answer.
"We talked."
"Oh."
"I told him he was wasting his time on you because you're in love with me."
Kate was outraged. "Luke, you didn't. Please tell me you're joking." He smiled briefly, then his eyes took on the distant look he'd been wearing a moment earlier. Kate couldn't ignore it any longer. "Luke, please tell me what's bothering you."
"What makes you think anything is?"
"You don't seem yourself tonight." Something in his voice puzzled her, a reserved quality. It was as if he was distancing himself from her, and that was baffling. After Clay's wedding, Luke had actually insisted they get married, and now he was treating her like some casual acquaintance. Kate took another sip of coffee while she collected her thoughts. Luke was sitting as far away from her as he could. His shoulders were stiff, and his dark eyes a shade more intense than usual. Gone was the laughing devilry she adored.
"I'll be out of town for a few days next week," he said abruptly. "I'm hoping to pick up a few pieces of new equipment from a wholesaler in New Mexico."
"When will the bank close the deal on the ranch?" Luke paused, and his eyes pinned hers.
"Your father and I signed all the papers the day before he married Dorothea Murphy."
Kate felt like bolting from her chair. The shock was so great. "Why didn't you tell me?" she demanded, her heart racing. "Why didn't my father? I shouldn't even be here now. This is your home, yours, bought and paid for, and..."
"Kate."
He set his mug aside and wearily rubbed the back of his neck.
"You're welcome to stay as long as you need. If you insist on leaving, that's fine too, but there's no rush."
She brought her hands to her cheeks, which were feverishly hot one minute, numb and cold the next. "I'll be out as soon as I can find some place to move."
Kate, for heaven's sake, why do you persist in being so stubborn?
She shook her head, hardly understanding it herself. All she knew was that this house, which had been a part of her from the time she was born, no longer belonged to her family. Despite everything Luke said, she couldn't stay on at the Circle L, and she had nowhere else to go. Chapter 8. Kate had just finished correcting a pile of math papers when her friend Linda Hutton entered her classroom. Linda's third grade class had been on a field trip, and the two friends had missed talking at lunchtime.
"Hi," Kate said, smiling up at her. "How did the tour of the jail and fire station go?"
Linda pulled up a child-sized chair and sank down on it, then started massaging her temples with her fingertips.
"Don't ask. By noon, I was ready to lock up the entire third grade class and lose the key."
"It certainly was quiet around school." Linda gave a soft snicker.
"Listen, I didn't come in here to learn what a peaceful day you had. The only reason I'm not home in bed curled up with aspirin and a hot water bottle is so I can tell you I was at Garner Feed and Supply yesterday afternoon."
"Oh?"
"Yes, and you aren't going to like what happened. While I was there, Mr. Garner asked me if I wanted to place a wager on the Rivers Logan wedding."
Kate's heart stopped cold. "He didn't."
"I'm afraid so."
"But Luke told me he'd taken care of the problem. He said it was a dead issue and I shouldn't worry about it anymore."
"It wasn't like Luke to make careless promises." "I wish I didn't have to tell you this," Linda said with a sympathetic sigh.
"But Luke told me he'd personally talked to Fred Garner."
"He did. Mr. Garner made a point of telling me that, too," Linda confirmed. "He claimed Luke was hotter than a Mexican chili pepper. Said Luke came into his place, ranted and raved, and threatened him within an inch of his life. But Kate, the whole time old Garner was talking to me, he wore a grin so wide I could have driven a Jeep through it."
Kate sagged against the back of her chair.
"Then Garner told me that the harder a man fights marriage, the faster he falls. Apparently he's taking bets from as far away as Riversdale and South."
Kate pressed a hand over her eyes.
"What am I going to do now?"
Linda shook her head.
"I don't know. At least Garner's taken it off the blackboard. But when I said something about that, he told me he had to, since half the county wants in on the action. It seems the betting outgrew his blackboard space."
"If nothing else, it proves how desperate this community is for entertainment," Kate muttered. "If the good people of Nightingale have nothing better to do than waste their time and money on something as silly as this, then it's a sad commentary on our lives here." Kate's friend cleared her throat and looked suspiciously guilty. Kate hesitated, studying Linda.
No, she told herself, not Linda.
Her closest childhood friend wouldn't place a wager. Her expression confirmed that she would. "You chose a date yourself, didn't you?" Kate demanded. Linda's gaze darted all over the room, avoiding Kate's completely. "You did, didn't you?" Kate exclaimed. Linda's fingers were curling and uncurling in her lap.
"You're my oldest, dearest friend. How could I ever do anything like that?" she wailed.
"I don't know, Linda. You tell me."
"All right, all right," Linda confessed. "I did put a wager on June. The first part of summer is such a lovely time of year for a wedding."
"I can't believe I'm hearing this." Kate had the sinking suspicion that her father had probably gotten in on the action, too, before he left on his honeymoon.
"I had no intention of betting," Linda hurried to explain. "In fact, I never would have, but the odds were so good for June. For a $5 bet, I could collect as much as $500 if you were to marry around the middle of the month, say the 16th. It's a Saturday. Weekends are always best for weddings, don't you think?"
Kate wasn't about to answer that. "You know, I suspect this whole thing is illegal. Each and every one of you should thank your lucky stars I don't call the sheriff."
"He's betting himself. On March. Said his own wedding anniversary is March 10th, and he thinks Luke will be able to persuade you early in the spring. According to Fred, the sheriff figures that once Luke gets you to agree, he won't wait around for a big wedding. He'll want to marry you before you can change your mind.
Kate sent her a furious look. If you're telling me this to amuse me, you've failed miserably.
I'm sorry, Kate. I really am. The only reason I went into the feed store was so I could assure you the whole betting thing was over. But I can't, and...
Instead, you placed a bet of your own.
I feel guilty about that,
Linda admitted, her voice subdued. Why don't we both forget it and concentrate on the Thanksgiving play? Instead of upsetting herself with more talk of this wedding lottery, Kate preferred to do something constructive with her time.
I might be able to make it up to you, though,
Linda murmured, fussing with the cuffs of her long-sleeved blouse. Whatever it is will have to be good.
It is.
Linda brightened and pulled a slip of paper from her purse.
I got this information from a friend of a friend, so I can't confirm how accurate it is, but I think it's pretty much for sure.
What's for sure? She asked when Linda handed her the paper. A local phone number was carefully printed on it.
Linda's sheepish look departed. It's Mrs. Jackson's number. She's the manager of the apartment complex on Spruce Street. They may have a vacancy coming up next week. If you're the first one to apply, you might have a decent chance of getting it.
Oh, Linda, that's great.
Am I forgiven?
Kate laughed. This makes up for a multitude of sins.
I was counting on that.
Kate called 5 times before she got through. Mrs. Jackson seemed surprised to be hearing from her.
I thought you were marrying that Rivers chap, the elderly woman said. Can't understand why you'd want to rent an apartment when you're engaged to that man. The whole town says it's just a matter of time.
Mrs. Jackson, Kate said loudly, because everyone knew the old woman was hard of hearing. Could I look at the apartment soon?
Won't be cleaned up for another day or two. I'll let you know once it's ready to be shown. But I can't help feeling it's a waste of time. Don't know what's wrong with you young women these days. In my day, we'd snap up a good man like Luke Rivers so fast it'd make your head spin.
I'd still like to see the apartment, Kate said.
Saturday, I guess. Yes, Saturday. Why don't you plan to come over then? I'll need a deposit if you decide to take the place.
Will a check be all right?
Good as gold when it's got your name on it, Mrs. Jackson said, chuckling. Don't suppose you have any season or month you're particularly partial to for weddings, would you?
No, I can't say I do.
Well, me and Ethel Martin think you and that Rivers fellow will tie the knot in April. April seems a mighty nice month for a country wedding.
I'm sure it is, Kate said, clenching her teeth.
Good. Now, listen, soon as the word gets out, someone else will be wanting that apartment. So if you aren't here by noon Saturday, I'm going to have to give it to whoever shows up, you understand?
I'll be there before noon.
See you then. Goodbye, Mrs. Jackson. You keep thinking about April, you hear?
Yes, I will, Kate murmured, rolling her eyes as she replaced the receiver.
That night, Luke stopped in shortly after Kate had finished dinner, which consisted of a sandwich eaten while she emptied the living room bookcases. She filled box after box with books, her own and her father's, as well as complete sets of Dickens, Thackeray, and George Eliot that had belonged to her mother. The physical activity gave her time to think. She'd realized the night she had dinner at the Franklins that she wasn't in love with Clay. That same evening, Kate had also realized how much Luke had done for her in the weeks following her broken engagement. It troubled her to acknowledge how unappreciative she'd been of his support. At Clay's wedding, she'd only added to the problem by asking Luke to marry her. He'd been willing to comply, willing to continue taking care of her through these difficult emotional times. In his own way, he did love her. Kate didn't question that. But he seemed far more concerned with protecting her from the harsh realities of life. All the talk about weddings had brought the subject to the forefront of Kate's mind. She tried to picture what her life would be like if she were to marry Luke. From the night of Clay's wedding, Luke had been telling her she was in love with him. It came as a shock to realize how right he was. She did love him, 1,000 times more than she'd ever dreamed.
Luke claimed he loved her too. If that was true, why was she fighting him so hard? For one thing, Luke had delivered his declaration of love in such a matter-of-fact, unromantic way. It was hard to believe he really meant it. If she could be sure that his feelings were rooted in more than sympathy and physical attraction, she'd feel more confident. But Luke kept trying to shield her as though she were a child. Now that she was moving into a place of her own, she'd be able to analyze her changing emotions more objectively. She'd be completely independent, away from the environment they'd always shared. Once they were apart, once it was clear that she could manage by herself, Luke would be free to pursue a relationship with her as an equal, an adult woman, not a little girl who needed looking after.
"I see you're at it again," he said,
standing in the doorway between the kitchen and the living room.
"Luke!"
She slapped her hand over her heart.
"You startled me."
Her thoughts had been full of him, and then suddenly he was there. As he did more and more often of late, Luke was frowning, but Kate wasn't going to let that destroy her mood. She was thrilled with the prospect of moving into her own apartment and settling into a different kind of life.
"I have good news. I'm going to look at an apartment on Saturday morning."
She dragged a heavy box of books across the carpet.
"So?" she said, huffing. "I'll probably be out of here sooner than we figured."
Luke interrupted her, effortlessly picking up the cardboard box and depositing it on the growing stack at the far side of the room.
"Thanks," she murmured, grateful for his help.
"You shouldn't be doing this heavy work by yourself."
"It's fine," she said, rubbing the dust from her hands. "The only trouble I'm having is with these books. We've got so many."
"Kate, damn it. I wish you'd listen to reason."
"I'm being reasonable," she said, fixing a reassuring smile on her face. "All I'm doing is giving you what's rightfully yours."
Luke's frown grew darker, and he dragged a hand through his hair.
"Listen, I think we may have more of a problem with Fred Garner than I thought."
"Yes, I know," Kate said, already filling the next box. "Linda told me after school that he's doing a thriving business."
Luke knelt on the floor beside her.
"You're not upset?"
"Would it do any good? I mean, you obviously did your best, and that just seemed to encourage the betting. As far as I can see, the only thing that will resolve this issue is time."
She kept her gaze averted and added, "When 6 months pass and we're still not married, everyone will accept that nothing's going on between us."
"Nothing?"
Luke asked bitterly. Hope stirred briefly within her.
"I like to think we'll always be friends."
An absent smile touched her lips. "Now that I've decided to distance my emotions from this lottery nonsense, I find it all rather comical. You should do the same."
"This amuses you."
"The good citizens of Nightingale are amused. Everyone seems to assume that because Clay and Dad both got married, and the ranch has been sold, I should swoon into your arms."
"Personally, I don't think that's such a bad idea."
"Oh?"
She chuckled and tucked a few more books in the box. Her heart was racing. If Luke was ever really going to declare his love, it would be now.
"That wasn't the message I got the other night. I tried to have a serious talk with you about my evening with Clay and Rory, and all you could do was glower at me."
She glanced up, shaking her head.
"Like you're doing now."
Luke walked away from her. He stood staring out the window, although Kate suspected the view was of little interest to him.
"I just wish you'd be sensible for once in your life," he snapped.
"I didn't know I had a habit of not being sensible," she said conversationally, disheartened by his attitude.
She rose and walked over to the larger bookcase. But even standing on her toes, she couldn't quite reach the trophy stored on the top shelf. Not to be defeated, she rolled the ottoman in front of the empty bookcase and climbed onto the thick, cushioned seat. She stretched up and her fingers were about to grasp the first trophy when she heard Luke's swift intake of breath.
"Kate!"
Just as he spoke, the ottoman started to roll out from under her. She flailed her arms in a desperate effort to maintain her balance. Kate had never seen Luke move faster. His hands closed around her waist in an iron grip, her cry of alarm caught in her throat as she was slammed against his solid chest.
of all the stupid, idiotic things I've ever seen.
I would have been perfectly fine if you hadn't called my name.
Her heart was pounding so hard she could barely breathe.
Luke's hold relaxed.
You're all right?
She nodded.
He closed his eyes, exhaling a ragged sigh. When he opened them, he assessed her carefully. Apparently, he concluded that she was unhurt, because he gave her an impatient little shake.
Whatever possessed you to climb up on that ottoman in the first place?
He demanded.
I couldn't reach the trophies.
Couldn't you have asked me to get them for you?
Why do you have such a difficult time accepting help from me?
I don't know, she admitted softly.
Still, he held her, and still Kate let him, trying to resist the comfort she felt in his arms. Her hands were braced against his powerful shoulders, but then she relaxed, unconsciously linking her fingers behind his neck. Neither moved for a long moment. Slowly, Luke ran a provocative finger down the length of her cheek, and Kate's eyes drifted shut. She felt herself drawn inexorably toward him. Her lips parted and trembled, awaiting his kiss. When she realized what she was doing, she opened her eyes and broke away from him so quickly that she would have stumbled had his hands not righted her. Embarrassed now, she stepped back. Luke brought down the trophies and handed them to her, but she saw that his eyes had become distant and unreadable.
That's enough packing for tonight, she murmured, her voice breathless even while she struggled to sound cheerful and bright.
He nodded slightly, then, without another word, stalked from the room. Kate didn't know what possessed her to follow him, certainly the last thing she should have done. Luke?
He stopped halfway through the kitchen and turned toward her. His eyes were steely and intense, and just seeing that harsh edge drove her to take a step backward and retreat.
You wanted something?
He asked when she didn't immediately explain.
Just to say.
She could barely talk coherently. It occurred to her to ask if he loved her the way a man loves his wife, but she lacked the courage.
I wanted to know if there was anything I could do for you before I left the house.
Paint the living room? Or something?
No.
Briefly, she toyed with the idea of following him outside. For all his words about wanting her to stay, he couldn't seem to get away from her fast enough. The thought of not having Luke for her friend anymore felt crippling. Her pride was the problem. Luke had told her repeatedly that she needed him, and she knew now that she did, but not in the way he meant. Not just as a friend who was willing to offer her the protection and peace of marriage, a friend who felt obliged to take care of her.
I don't want you to move from the ranch, he said.
Her heart was begging him to give her a reason to stay, the reason she longed to hear. Luke, please accept that I'm only doing what I think is best for my life.
I know that, but damn it, Kate, why are you being so stubborn? Why do you resist me when all I want is to make things easier for you? We could be married and you could settle down in the house and nothing needs to change. You insist on causing all this turmoil in your life.
There wasn't anything Kate could say.
You can't tell me we aren't physically attracted to each other. The electricity between us is powerful enough to light up Main Street.
I know.
Say it, Kate. Admit that it felt good when I held you just now.
Luke reached for her then, and Kate felt as if she'd lost some strategic battle. When his mouth found hers, her stomach tightened and fluttered wildly. Against her will, her lips parted, and before she understood what was happening, she slid her arms tightly around his hard, narrow waist, wanting to hold on to him forever. Luke moaned, then suddenly tore his lips from hers. She felt a tremor go through him before he raised his head and gazed tenderly into her face, his eyes dark and gentle.
Is it so difficult to say?
He asked.
Chapter 9.
This is the second bedroom, Mrs. Jackson was saying as she led Kate through the vacant rooms. From the moment she'd walked in the door, Kate had known that this apartment would suit her needs perfectly.
I can't understand why you'd be wanting a two-bedroom place, but that's none of my business.
Mrs. Jackson went on. Her hair was tightly curled in pink plastic rollers. To the best of her ability, Kate couldn't remember ever seeing the woman's hair without rollers.
What did that Rivers fellow say when you told him you were moving into town?
She didn't wait for a response, but cackled delightedly. Frankly, I wasn't sure you'd show up this morning. My friend Ethel and me talked about it, and we figured Rivers would tie a rope around you and hightail it to Nevada and marry you quick. Offhand, I can't remember who's got money on November.
You said to be here before noon, she murmured, ignoring the other comments.
Well, if Luke didn't stop you, I expected that snowstorm would, the one the weatherman's been talking about for the last 2 days.
Do you really think it's going to snow? Kate asked anxiously. The sky had been dark all morning, and the temperature seemed to be dropping steadily. Normally, Kate wouldn't have chanced driving into town by herself with weather conditions this uncertain, but if she hadn't come, she might have missed getting the apartment.
If I was you, I'd stick around town for a while, Mrs. Jackson advised. I'd hate the thought of you getting trapped on the road in a bad storm.
I'm sure I'll be all right. She'd driven her father's four-wheel drive truck, and even if the storm did materialize, she shouldn't have any trouble getting home. The Circle L was only 20 minutes away, and how much snow could fall in that time?
Would you like me to write you a check now? Kate asked, eager to be on her way. That'd be fine. There's still some cleaning to be done, but it'll be finished before the first of the month. Fact is, you can start moving your things in here next week if you want.
Thanks, I appreciate that.
Mrs. Jackson bundled her coat around her thin shoulders as they stepped outside. She glanced at the sky and shook her pink, curled head.
If you are going home, I suggest you do it quick. I don't like the look of them clouds.
Then I'd better write that check and head out.
No more than 5 minutes later, Kate was sitting in her father's truck. The sky was an oyster gray and darkening by the minute. Shivering from the cold, she zipped her jacket all the way up to her neck and drew on a pair of fleece-lined leather gloves. Kate started the engine and shifted the gears. The radio was set on her dad's favorite country station, and the music played softly. When she left the outskirts of town, she hit a couple of rough patches in the road and bounced so high her head nearly banged into the roof of the cab. After that, she kept her speed down. She drove at a steady pace, her gaze focused on the road ahead, scanning the horizon for any sign of snow. When she was about 10 miles from the ranch, the storm began. Light, fluffy flakes whirled around the windshield. The morning sky darkened until it resembled dusk, and Kate was forced to turn on the headlights. A love song came on the radio, one the band at the Red Bull had played that fateful Friday night. The night Luke had lifted her in his arms and carried her off the dance floor. Embarrassed by the memory, she reached for the radio dial, intending to change the station. She didn't see the rock that had rolled onto the road. Not until she was almost on top of it, and then it was too late. Her instincts took control. She gripped the wheel with both hands, then swerved and slammed into the embankment. The truck stopped with a sudden jerk, and the engine went dead. For a stunned moment, Kate couldn't breathe. Her heart was in her throat, and her hands clenched the steering wheel so tightly her fingers felt numb. Finally, when she was able to move, Kate released a long, shaky breath, grateful the accident hadn't been worse. She took a moment to compose herself and tried to restart the engine, but nothing happened. Twice more, she tried to get the engine to kick over, but it wouldn't even cough or sputter. Frustrated, she smacked the cushioned seat with her gloved hand and closed her eyes. The snow was coming down thick and fast now.
Don't worry, she muttered, opening the door and climbing out. Stay calm.
Although everything Kate knew about the internal workings of engines would fit on a post-it note, she decided to see if she could find the problem. The snow and wind struck at her viciously, as though to punish her for not listening to Mrs. Jackson and staying in town. After considerable difficulty locating the latch, Kate raised the hood. With a prayer on her lips, she looked everything over, then touched two or three different parts as if that would repair whatever was broken. Certain that she was destined to sit out the storm huddled in the cab, she returned and tried the key again. The engine gave one sick cough and promptly died.
Damn!
Nothing remained but to sit and wait for someone to drive past. Leaving the truck and attempting to make her way to the house would be nearly as insane as driving around in a snowstorm in the first place. Kate could almost hear Luke's lecture now. It would be hot enough to blister her ears. All she could do was hope her father never found out about this, or she'd get a lecture from him too. A half hour passed, and, hoping against hope, Kate tried the engine again. Nothing. But it was snowing so hard now that even if the truck had started, she probably wouldn't have been able to drive in these conditions. She tried to warm herself by rubbing her hands and hugging her arms close to her body. It had become cold, the coldest weather she could remember. With very little to take her mind off the freezing temperature, she laid her head back and closed her eyes, trying to relax. There was nothing to do but sit patiently and wait. She must have dozed off because the next thing she knew, the truck door was jerked open and her arm gripped in a sudden, painful hold. "Have you lost your mind?" The fury in Luke's voice was like a slap in her face. "Luke! Luke!" She was so grateful to see him that she didn't question where he'd come from or how he'd found her. It all felt like a dream. Moving was difficult, but she slid her arms around his neck and hugged him, laughing and crying at the same time. "How did you ever find me? Don't you realize I was about to have heart failure worrying about you? You're sick?" Her mind was so muddled, of course he'd be worried. How had he known where she was? And he seemed so angry. But that was nothing new. For the past few days, he'd been continually upset with her. Her arms tightened around his neck, and she breathed in his fresh, warm scent. When she sat up and looked around, she was shocked by how dark it had become. If it weren't for the blowing, swirling snow, the stars would be twinkling. The storm had abated somewhat, but not by much.
"I can't believe you'd do anything so stupid."
His voice was low and angry, his face blanched with concern.
"Don't you know you could have frozen to death out here? If you don't want to consider your own life, then what about Devin away on his honeymoon? If anything happened to you, he'd never forgive himself."
Kate bore up well under Luke's tirade, refusing to cry even though she was trembling with shock and cold and the truth of his words. As for the part about being frozen, she was already halfway there, but he didn't seem to notice that.
"Kate, I don't know what I would have done if you'd left the truck and tried to make it back to the house on foot."
"I knew enough to stay here, at least." She'd been a fool not to have taken the danger more seriously. "I'm sorry," she whispered. He pulled her to him and held her so tight she couldn't move. His face was buried in her hair, one ungloved hand gently stroking her forehead, her cheek, her chin, as if he had to touch her to know he'd found her safe. When he lifted his head, he gazed into her eyes, his own dark and filled with unspoken torment.
"Are you all right?"
She nodded and tried to talk, but her teeth began to chatter. Luke shrugged out of his coat and draped it over her shoulders.
"Tell me what happened."
"I swerved to miss a rock and hit the embankment. It was already snowing and I changed stations and that's when it happened. I don't know what I did, but after I turned so sharply, the truck wouldn't start."
"I've got to get you to the house."
He half carried her to his truck and placed her in the passenger seat. He climbed into the driver's side and leaned over to wrap a warm blanket around her, then began to rub some warmth back into her hands. "What about Dad's truck?" Kate asked, shocked by how tired and weak she felt.
"We'll worry about that later. I'll send someone to fix it when the storm's over."
The blast from the heater felt like a tropical wind, and Kate finally started to relax. She was terribly cold, but dared not let Luke know. All the way back to the ranch, he didn't say a word. Driving was difficult, and she didn't want to disturb his concentration, so she sat beside him, her hands and feet numb despite the almost oppressive warmth, and her eyes heavy with weariness. Several of the ranch hands ran toward the front porch when Luke pulled into the yard. Kate found the flurry of activity all centered on her disconcerting, but she tried to thank everyone and apologized profusely for the concern she'd caused. If Luke had been impatient and demanding when he rescued her, it didn't compare to the way he rapped out orders once she was inside the house.
"A bath,"
he said, pointing toward the bathroom as if she'd never been there before.
Warm water, not hot.
Bill Schmidt, Luke's newly appointed foreman, followed them to the doorway of the tiny room, looking pale and anxious. Kate felt so weak that she simply stood, leaning against the sink, while Luke ran the bathwater, testing it several times to check the temperature.
It stopped snowing. Do you think I should contact one of her female friends, maybe Ms. Franklin?
Bill asked, shifting awkwardly from foot to foot. When Luke nodded, Bill charged out of the house, slamming the door behind him. Luke turned off the bathwater and straightened. He shook his head, arms limp and at his sides, mouth stern and tight.
Kate, what could have possessed you to drive in from town during the worst storm of the year? Can you imagine what went through my mind when I was looking for you?
It took all her strength just to manage a few words.
How'd you know where I was? You told me you were going to town to look at an apartment on Saturday, remember? When you weren't back after the blizzard hit, I called around town until I learned you were renting one of the apartments on Spruce Street. Mrs. Jackson told me she'd warned you herself and that you'd left a few hours earlier. Also that she's fond of April because of all the flowers, whatever the hell that means.
I'm sorry I worried you. His hands gripped her shoulders, and the anguish he'd endured during the past few hours was written plainly on his face. The anger and pain in his eyes told her about the panic he'd felt. A rush of emotion crossed his expression, and he pulled her close, wrapping his arms around her. He didn't speak for a long moment. Instead, quietly, gently, he stroked her hair as he dragged in several deep breaths. Kate's heart pounded wildly in her chest. She longed to look at him, to gaze into his eyes again. She was puzzled by the intensity she'd seen there. Fear, yes, doubt and anger, too. But there was something more, something deeper that she didn't recognize. She longed to tell him she loved him, just the way he claimed she did, but the thought didn't make it to her lips. Love was a strange, unpredictable emotion, so painful and difficult. Her eyes held his, and she tried to smile, but her mouth wouldn't cooperate. Her fingertips mapped out the lines of his face, as she strove to reassure him with her touch when her words couldn't. He captured her wrist and brought her palm to his lips. She'd just opened her mouth to speak when Bill Schmidt came crashing into the room.
Rory Franklin will be over as soon as she can.
Thanks, Bill,
Luke said, without looking away from Kate.
I'll be leaving now if you don't need me.
Fine. Thanks again for your help.
No problem. Glad you're all right, Kate.
He touched his hat and then was gone.
Someone should help you out of those clothes, Luke said, half smiling. And I don't think I should be the one to do it.
I'm fine. I can undress myself.
Luke didn't seem inclined to challenge her statement. She floated toward the bathroom door and ushered him out, then shut it softly. Once she started undressing, she discovered that Luke hadn't been too far wrong when he'd suggested she needed help. By the time she sank into the warm water, she was shivering, exhausted, and intensely cold again. But the water felt wonderful, although it stung her tender skin. When the prickling sensation left her, she was almost overwhelmed by the sensation of comfort. She sighed deeply, closed her eyes, and lay back in the tepid water.
Kate?
Luke called from the other side of the door.
Are you okay in there?
I'm fine.
Do you need anything?
No, she assured him. A sudden thought made her bolt upright, gasping. Luke could have died searching for me. She closed her eyes and whispered a prayer of thanks that the events of this traumatic afternoon had turned out as they had. She must have sobbed because Luke called out,
What's wrong? It sounds like you're crying.
You could have died trying to find me.
I didn't.
I know, she said hoarsely, biting her lip. I'm glad. I wouldn't want you to die.
That's encouraging,
he answered with a soft laugh. Dressed in her flannel pajamas and long robe, her hair hanging wetly against her shoulders, Kate let herself out of the bathroom. She looked like something the cat had proudly dragged onto the porch. But at least she felt better, 1,000 times better. Luke was sitting in the kitchen nursing a shot glass of whiskey.
Kate had very rarely seen Luke drink straight liquor.
I blame myself, he muttered. I knew about the storm and I didn't warn you.
Warn me? That wouldn't have made any difference. I would have gone into town anyway. I had to be there before noon if I was going to get the apartment.
You couldn't have stopped me, Luke, you know that.
Luke shook his head grimly.
What I can't understand is why moving away from here is so all-fired important that you'd risk your fool neck to do it.
Mrs. Jackson said she'd have to give the apartment to someone else if I wasn't there.
She wouldn't have understood if you'd phoned. You had to go look at it in a blizzard.
He urged her into a chair and poured a cup of hot coffee, adding a liberal dose of whiskey before handing her the cup. I already told you I couldn't wait. Besides, it wasn't snowing when I drove there, Kate said patiently. Please don't be angry, Luke. She reached for his hand, needing to touch him. He clutched her fingers with his own.
Kate, if anything should convince you we ought to get married, this is it. You need me, princess, can't you see that?
He released her hand to brush the damp curls from her forehead.
How many times do I have to tell you that before you'll believe it?
Oh, Luke, she moaned, feeling close to tears.
I want to take care of you, Kate. What nearly happened today, plus the fiasco with Eric Wilson, should tell you something.
She stared at him, feeling lost and disoriented. There are women in this community, women my age, who already have children. Even as she spoke, she knew she wasn't making sense. Luke blinked in confusion.
You want children? Great, so do I. In fact, I'm hoping we'll have several.
That's not what I meant, Kate said, exasperated. She tried again. These women don't live with a guardian. Was that clearer? She wondered.
Of course they don't. They're married,
Luke countered sharply. Kate shut her eyes. Don't you understand? I'm old enough to be on my own. I don't need someone to protect me.
We're not discussing your age.
You don't love me, she blurted. You feel sorry for me, that's all. You think because Clay's married to Rory and Dad married Dorothea that I don't have anyone. But I do. There's Linda and lots of other friends. I've got a good life. I don't need to get married. Luke sprang from the chair and walked to the sink, pressing both hands against the edge, hunching his shoulders, his back toward her. He said nothing for several minutes, and when he finally spoke, his voice was cool, detached.
All I can say is that you must feel a lot more strongly about this than I realized. Apparently you're willing to risk your life to get away from me.
I didn't go to town knowing I was in any danger, she objected, but he didn't seem to hear.
Then leave, Kate. I won't try to keep you any longer, despite the fact that I love you and want to marry you. If you want your independence so badly, then take it.
Luke, please, you don't love me. Not the way you should.
Oh, and what do you know about that? Obviously nothing.
I know you keep saying you want to take care of me.
That's so wrong.
Yes, a woman needs more. She needs to be an equal.
My love and my life are all I've got to offer you, Kate.
He broke in.
It's a take-it-or-leave-it proposition.
That's not fair, she said. You make it sound as though I'm going to live my life alone if I don't marry you within the next 10 minutes. Slowly, he turned to face her. His eyes were piercing and as dark as she'd ever seen them.
Fine. You've made your choice. I'm not going to stand here arguing with you. It's over, Kate. This is the last time we'll talk about marriage.
She tried to say something but couldn't think coherently. Even if she'd been able to work out her thoughts and give them voice, she doubted Luke was in any mood to listen. He avoided looking at her as he stalked out of the house. A fire was blazing in the fireplace, and Kate stretched out on the nearby sofa, intending to mull over Luke's words. But her eyes felt as heavy as her heart, and almost as soon as she laid her head on the pillow, she was asleep. Someone working in the kitchen stirred Kate to wakefulness, and when she glanced at her watch, she was shocked to see that she'd slept for almost 2 hours. Her heart soared when she thought it must be Luke. He'd been so angry with her earlier, although she supposed his anxiety about finding her in the snowstorm explained his attitude. She hoped they could clear the air. But it wasn't Luke. Instead, Rory peered into the living room, her eyes concerned.
I hope you don't mind. Luke let me in.
You're always welcome here, Rory, you know that.
Bill Schmidt called with an incredible story about you being lost in the storm. I could hardly believe it. Clay drove me over as soon as he could. But to be honest, I don't know who was worse off, you or Luke.
At the mention of his name, Kate lowered her gaze to the multicolored quilt spread across her lap. Idly, she smoothed the wrinkles, trying not to think about Luke.
How are you feeling?
I'm okay, I just have a headache.
A bad one from the look of you. I've never seen you this pale.
Kate's hands twisted the edge of the homemade quilt. Luke was furious with me for going into town. I found an apartment, Rory. He said it was over between us. She began to cry. He said he'd be glad when I was gone and that he'd never bother me again. By the time Kate had finished, her voice was reduced to a hoarse whisper.
I see, Rory murmured.
I don't even recognize Luke anymore. We used to be able to talk to each other and joke together, but lately we can't seem to discuss anything in a rational manner.
I've tried, Rory, I really have, but Luke makes everything so difficult. Men have a habit of doing that.
I wanted to tell Luke about the night I had dinner with you and Clay, and... She stopped abruptly when she realized what she'd almost said.
What about it? Rory coaxed.
It's just that I dreaded the evening because I was afraid of being with Clay again. I'm sorry, I don't want to upset you, Rory, but I loved Clay for a long time, and getting over him was much harder than I thought it would be. Until the night we were all together.
The words came rushing from her.
I saw Clay with you, and I assumed I'd feel all this pain, but instead I felt completely free. You're both so happy, and I knew, then and there, that I never loved Clay the way you do. True, I adored him for years, but it was more of an adolescent infatuation. Clay was part of my youth. When I understood all these things about myself, all these changes, I felt such hope, such excitement.
Oh, Kate, I'm so pleased to hear that.
A shy smile dented Rory's cheeks. I wanted to explain all this to Luke, but I never got the chance. And now it's all so much worse. I don't know if we'll ever be able to talk to each other again.
Of course you will.
But he sounded so angry.
I'm sure that's because of his concern for your safety.
I can't talk to him, Kate repeated sadly. At least not yet, and maybe not ever.
Yes, you will. And it'll be sooner than you think, Rory said. You won't be able to break off all those years of friendship, and neither will he. He'll be around in a day or two, ready to apologize for being so harsh. Just you wait and see.
Kate shook her head. You make it all seem so easy.
Trust me, I know it isn't. When I think back to the way things went between Clay and me, I empathize all the more with what you're going through now.
Kate remembered the dark days following Clay's visit to California. Neither Rory nor Clay had ever told her what happened. Clay had gone to San Francisco, intending to bring Rory back with him, and instead had returned alone.
Maybe we need to get away from each other for a while, Kate said. Maybe if we aren't in such close proximity, we'll be able to sort out what we really feel for each other. When are you moving to town?
Monday, Kate said, looking at the cardboard boxes stacked against the opposite wall.
Do you need help? Skip, Clay, and I could easily lend a hand.
That would be wonderful. The rest of the weekend passed in a blur. Kate didn't see Luke once. So much for Rory's assurances that he'd come by soon to talk everything out. Apparently, he meant what he'd said. Monday morning, when she was about to leave for school, Kate paused before she got into her car, deciding she should at least say goodbye to Luke before she moved out. Luke wasn't in the barn, but Bill Schmidt was.
Good morning, Bill.
Howdy, Kate, he said with a wide grin. Glad to see there's no ill effects from your accident.
None, thanks. Is Luke around?
Bill settled his hands in the pockets of his bib overalls.
No, thought you knew. He left yesterday afternoon for New Mexico to look at some new equipment. He won't be back until Thursday.